I am Plante on the line in Vancouver, British Columbia, at thecommentary.ca. It is time once again for the annual Chutzpah Festival. This is the 20th year. Beginning this Saturday, the 21st of November, and running through to the 28th, there is an exciting lineup of comedy, music, theater, and dance presented for the first time in a digital format. Joining me now is Jessica Mann Gutteridge, the new artistic managing director of the festival, who will preview for us the works from the artists who hail from the United Kingdom, Israel, the United States, and here in Canada. This group of accomplished and internationally renowned artists will perform in concert, new dance works, theatrical works in progress, as well as comedy. There'll be conversations with the artists, as well as the chance to interact. Visit chutzpahfestival.com for information and tickets. As well, there'll be limited seating at the Norman and Annette Rothstein Theater at Oak and 41st Avenue here. But again, because of COVID-19 protocols, check their website for updates. The dramaturge Jessica Mann Gutteridge recently joined the Vancouver West Side Theatre Society as artistic managing director for the Rothstein Theatre and Chutzpah, the Lisa Nemetz International Festival of the Performing Arts. She managed Granville Island's performance works and was a managing director and education manager at Carousel Theatre for Young People. She received her MFA from the Yale School of Drama's Department of Dramaturgy and Dramatic Criticism, and she studied directing at Wesleyan University. She studied drama education at Adelphi University. She was born and raised in New York and returned to the theater after nearly two decades as a lawyer. At Columbia Law School, she was editor-in-chief of the Columbia VLA Journal of Law and the Arts. Please welcome to the Plante Online program, Jessica Mann Gutteridge. Ms. Gutteridge, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. It's the 20th annual Chutzpah Festival. Was there any talk at all that it wouldn't happen this year, say?
I think all the options were on the table. It was a transition year for us in terms of leadership to begin with me starting in the role right at the end of February and taking over from Mary Louise Albert. And we had talked even at that point about whether we might do a more transitional festival this year. And then when the pandemic hit, we really thought through all of our options, including postponing the festival this year, but came up with a plan that I think is going to be an exciting festival and keeps us bringing performing arts to our audiences this year.
Indeed, these past few months, this era that we now live in, I think for a lot of people showed us the necessity of the arts, and it's just great to see this lineup continue as it does in the tradition of the festival, as well as, you know, it's changed obviously because of circumstances, but it just shows how much we need the arts in our lives and every day, right? I mean, I'm sure that's the case.
I completely agree, right? And I think that, you know, we're seeing now as we are getting into November with you know, cases peaking again and people spending more time in their homes. Mm-hmm. I'm really glad that we're going to be able to bring some art and light and joy and communal experiences into people's homes and also into our theater for small audiences that will be able to come and take part in those events as well.
So the I guess other than the Ben Kaplan event, there will be some tickets available at the Rothstein Theater between the 21st and the 28th, is that right?
Yes, we have two shows that will be taking place with in-person performances. Those performances will also be live streamed for folks who want to watch them from home. Those are a world premiere dance piece called Hourglass by Idan Cohen of Nissan's Opera and Dance. That has been created as part of a artistic residency at the Rothstein Theater, and so we're really excited to debut that work. And we'll close the festival on November 28th with a comedy night that will have a live local lineup of stand-up comedians in the Rothstein Theater. Mm-hmm. And a virtual performance by the El Solomons from Brooklyn, New York. So we'll have a bit of a hybrid experience.
And just about some of the dance, the other dance offerings, you mentioned Hourglass. The other piece is, I don't know how to pronounce it.
Pigulim.
Pigulim. And is that, that'll be at the Rothstein, so people can see that, but then obviously it'll be available for streaming. Is that right?
The Ella Rothschild piece, Pigulim, which is taking place on November 23rd, is a streaming dance piece. That's coming to us from the Tel Aviv Dance Festival, where it debuted in the fall, and will be joined following the presentation for a live interview by the choreographer and lead dancer, Ella. She'll be interviewed by our festival host, Iris Barr, who will be performing live interviews of all of our artists this year. In her many alter egos, we're not totally sure who's going to show up what night. It's going to be a surprise for all of us.
So for people who aren't familiar with Barr, she's a host of a podcast too, isn't she?
Yes. So Iris is a very, very talented person. She was part of our festival last year, performing a number of her really interesting characters in a show called Die. And when I started thinking about doing a virtual festival, I thought that Iris would make a perfect host, because not only is she a really engaging character actor and stand-up comedian in her own right, she's also a podcaster who is a very insightful interviewer and does her interviews often in the guise of characters that she performs. And she's got a whole ensemble of really entertaining characters who are going to be joining us. And Iris will also be on November 26th performing her own show, which she has billed as an interactive comedy slash therapy session. So the audience should be prepared to participate in that one. That is not just watching, that's
really
also participating.
Yeah. That sounds fun. Her reputation precedes her. And I think it's just great that if you get one of those passes, I guess, for all the events, she'll be there every night. Is that right?
She'll be there every night. She'll be talking to all of our artists after their presentations, and that will be live. Some of our presentations are going to be live streamed while they're happening. Others are will be pre-recorded by the artist, and then they'll be joining for the live interview as well.
The playwright Tamara Michener, her piece Old Friends, it says in the literature that it's a work in progress. So this is literally a debut, isn't it?
Yes, and in fact, we have two theater works in progress being offered on November 22nd. I myself come from a theater background, and I trained as a dramaturg. And one of the things that really interests me about that work is having an opportunity this year to pull the curtain back a little bit for our audiences about how theater pieces get made. So we will be seeing Tamara's new solo piece, Old Friends, which is an exploration of the friendship and relationship of Simon and Garfunkel and the meaning of them to her generation and previous generations. We'll be seeing a snapshot of where that work is right now as it's being created. And then later in the day, we'll be joined by Ruckel Kafrisin from New York, who's also going to be giving us a preview of her new play, Stumer Shabbos, which means Silent Sabbath in Yiddish, which is a play about a play. It's about the discovery, the fictional discovery of a lost fictional Yiddish play that caused a scandal. And so she'll be presenting that with some of her cast members and Iris to talk through the creation process there.
Yeah, it must be a fascinating work that you do as a dramaturg, because there's nothing like taking a work and putting it on stage in front of an audience, let alone, you know, doing it in the room or at a table, so a table read. There's something that it need. I mean, it's needed to go on a stage, isn't it?
Yeah, and you know, right now we're really exploring what is the stage in this world. While we're working in these virtual modes, mm-hmm. What does it mean to bring a play to the stage? So we're very interested in seeing how the medium of the virtual presentation affects the play itself and the development of the play, and whether we're seeing some new forms emerge. I think it's something that is an exciting opportunity for audiences to get to witness. It's not going to look like what they're used to seeing when mm-hmm. they go to see a play, but it may be really exciting to take part in these early days of this new work creation. And these are both plays, of course, that I look forward to bringing back to the festival when they are ready to be staged in a theater. So our audiences will get to track that development over time.
You mentioned Shtumer Shabbos. Drag is very big in our culture nowadays. And this work in particular takes that and includes the heritage of Yiddish theater, which is unfortunately largely forgotten nowadays. And I think it's just a wonderful way to bring the two together. You know what I mean?
Yes, I'm very excited to see what Shane Baker brings to the role of Sonia. I saw the work in an earlier iteration where the role was played by a different performer who was not a drag artist. Uh-huh. So I'm excited to see what new layers Shane's participation introduces. And it's very exciting to see an exploration of Yiddish theater, both its past and its present in one work.
Indeed, indeed. Guy Mintas, I'm not familiar with him. What does his music sound like?
Guy is a marvelous, marvelous jazz pianist. He was also part of last year's festival. He performed live at the Rothstein Theater. And his work is influenced by his background, which is he's descended from Iraqi, Moroccan, and Polish Jewish family, mm-hmm. and lives currently in Tel Aviv. But he's really, as he puts it, a citizen of the world. He travels the world, and his music is really beautiful and soulful. He's got a new release coming up later this month of Gershwin tunes. So mm-hmm. I expect we're going to be hearing a good bit of Gershwin in this performance. And Guy is taking requests. And there may still be time to get those requests in, so you can email us through our website if you've got one.
That's pretty neat that the unlike other arts offerings, not only in this town but elsewhere, the commitment that you all have at Chutzpah for including the audience. I mean, that must have been something that you considered as you were programming the festival and setting it up, if you will, this year, right?
Absolutely. I really always look first to the audience. Who are we presenting work to, and how can we make an exciting and thoughtful and meaningful experience for the people who are going to be attending and participating in the events? Moving into a primarily virtual format made us really think about how do we make it participatory, especially in the case where, for example, Guy's piece, which is going to be pre-recorded. Mm-hmm. He's very happy to be getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning to be interviewed by Iris mm-hmm. live, but he didn't feel as comfortable with the idea of playing for us at 4 o'clock in the morning and delivering, you know, his best work. So as we started to think about how can we take things that are even a pre-recorded performance and make it really participatory, Guy had the suggestion that he accommodate requests from our audience into the work. So it really is a custom experience.
And it's all about adapting, isn't it? And that's really the time that we're living in, and we're doing it in our lives, big and small. It would just be expected that an arts festival would consider the same, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's why ERISA's role in the festival as our host and live interviewer really made it all come together, because she can be, in a way, a stand-in for our audience to ask the questions that they'd like to ask, and bring that feeling of spontaneity that we worried about losing when we moved from a collective experience in the theater into a digital setting.
In terms of programming a festival like this, especially with the considerations of this year itself and the pandemic, what are you looking for in terms of the talent, the pieces, the programming that you're bringing into town, that you're putting up on stage? It's a wonderful lineup you have this year. I'm sure it could have been, the choices that you had to work with were probably double, triple the number, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm like a kid in a candy store at this point as artistic director, because there's such an amazing world of performing artists out there, ready, willing, and able to perform for us. And there's a beautiful, diverse, multicultural world of Jewish arts and culture to draw from. I'm very pleased that this year we were able to come up with a lineup that's really well balanced in terms of the types of performing arts we're offering. It came out quite symmetrically. We've got two dance pieces, two comedy events, two theater pieces, and two music events. So I'm very pleased with that mix. We have a mix of local artists and international artists.
Right.
We have artists participating from across North America. We've got brand new work. We've got established work. We've got old friends and new friends. I'm really pleased with how we've been able to balance the lineup this year.
So you mentioned that this is your first year with the festival. I understand that you were born and raised in New York, but you've been in town for a while. I guess you were with Performance Works previous to this? Yeah.
Yes, I came here 6.5 years ago, indeed from New York. My husband is born and raised Vancouver person, and it took me a while, but I finally talked him into moving back west. Previously to this position, I most recently was the manager of Performance Works on Granville Island, one of my favorite spaces in the city.
Indeed. I was also reading your bio, and you'd worked as a lawyer. You trained in the arts, but you worked as a lawyer for a while and then went back into the arts. What drew you back, say?
Yes, I must confess that I was indeed a lawyer for many years. I am recovering from that. As you said, I started out in the theater as a dramaturg, and I studied directing as well. And for some of the usual reasons, I found my way into a law career, which I actually enjoyed quite a lot. But after almost 20 years, I was really eager to get back into my creative life and my arts life. I did all those years work with nonprofit arts organizations on a legal and board of directors function.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really lacking in my life, the connection to the creative arts. So we made a big change and packed up our house and kids and moved to Vancouver, and I have been working in the arts in our fair city ever since.
You know, I'm just looking at your CV here, you studied at Yale and Wellesleyan and Adelphi. When people find that out about you, I'm sure they ask you who might have been in your classes. I mean, do you get that a lot?
Not as much as you would think, but I will say that we had a spectacularly talented group of people when I was at Yale. I did meet my husband there, but he's not famous. He's a stage technician here in town. I did go to school with Paul Giamatti, is one of the really notable members of our class. The wonderful actor Sanaa Lathan was a year behind me, as was the actor, director, and writer Tom McCarthy, who is brilliant.
Spotlighting.
Exactly.
Yeah. I was just thinking, I can't remember, I saw a movie the other day, and that's the first thing, you know, they find out where one went to school at the dinner party, and then they, yeah. You know, they have to ask, you know, did you know so-and-so from, and I'm sure when people find out that you studied drama or dramaturgy or criticism even,
yeah.
They probably want to know, you know, who else was in your class, in those times.
Yeah, I mean, there were many, many classmates of mine that are not household names, mm-hmm. the way those folks are, but that have, that are really at the top of their profession in design, mm-hmm. in theater technology, in theater administration. I mean, we're getting old now, so we're becoming the eminence grise of the theater scene, I'm sad to say.
When we spoke a moment ago about the necessity of the arts and how much we miss it and need it in our lives, as a pandemic continues, you know, it's called show business for a reason. There's the business part of it, and we have to pay heed to that, otherwise the show part doesn't survive. I mean, are these conversations that you are having with your colleagues in this town about what's next, say, for the arts in the next year or so, and whether it'll continue?
Yeah, and these are conversations that are happening, you know, locally on a nationwide scale and internationally, because we're really, we're all threatened by this pandemic. The longer this goes on, the longer we can't meet, the more threatened our art form really is. We are facing very significant financial challenges. Mm-hmm. It is expensive to produce work in the virtual space as well as in the in meet space, mm-hmm. As it should be, because artists and technicians and designers and composers, I mean, everyone should be paid properly. And those costs don't go away just because we move into a digital format. We've had to develop new skills and acquire new equipment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that all has a cost to it. At the same time, you know, sponsorships and ticket prices and all of those revenue sources are threatened. We have been very fortunate to be funded by all three levels of government, and there is emergency funding that has helped many of us survive, mm-hmm. and our foundations and individual donors and sponsors have been as supportive as they possibly can be, but this is going to be a long recovery. We were the first to get shut down, and I expect that we'll be among the last to be fully reopened. So we will need support, and we are constantly thinking about how we can change what we do so that we can adjust and thrive in these really challenging circumstances.
So Marvelous Way between the 21st and the 28th is to go to the website and get tickets. If you're comfortable enough to go to the theater, obviously do that. But if not, the streaming portion of the program, I mean, that's easy to do, isn't it? Even if you're not as tech savvy as one might
Absolutely.
Be.
Absolutely. It's a very simple process. You visit hookthefestival.com, and it's very easy to buy tickets through our website. And for those who are interested in attending our small, physically distanced, in-person performances at the Rothstein Theater, We have many safety measures in place to keep you as safe as we possibly can and to have a beautiful experience in the theater.
Jessica, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. Break a leg, as they say, and all the best.
Thank you so much. I really appreciated having a chance to talk with you.
The website for more is at chutzpahfestival.com, the 20th annual Chutzpah, the Lisa Nemetz International Jewish Festival of the Performing Arts, runs from this Saturday, the 21st, through the 28th of November, 2020. Its artistic managing director, Jessica Mann-Gutteridge, joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunta.